You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome to the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all across the country. And I've got a dear friend of mine who is a brilliant dentist. And you're not going to want to miss this. Dr. James Woodyard, who is an unbelievable periodontist, and he's going to share with us one of the, if not the biggest missed opportunity in restorative dentistry. He gets to see this stuff all the time. So you are not going to want to miss this. So grab a pen and hit the share button, and we'll see you in just a second.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Barrett is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. And today, this particular episode is a huge treat of mine because I've got a dear friend of mine on who is not only an amazing clinician, awesome human being, great dad, great husband, great everything, and just wildly entertaining sometimes. And you're going to see in just a second, he's a brilliant clinician. And I'm just so grateful he's going to be on. And we're going to do quite a few of these because he has learned a ton. So Dr. James Woodyard, periodontist. So James, say hi.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
All right.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Kurt. Really appreciate it.
Cool, man. I really appreciate you being on here. Now, I've had the chance to come to your practice, speak to your study club quite a bit, and what you do is amazing, not only from the systems, the leadership stuff, and you also work with an incredible group of general dentists and specialists alike in your Seattle Study Club. You and I have known each other for almost 10 years. We got a chance to meet at the Seattle Study Club Symposium, and if you haven't been, you got to go. It's amazing. And then you've been involved with some of the best treatment planning teams, workshops everywhere. So you get to see all of this stuff and you get an up close look at what's really going on in dentistry. And as you and I were talking before the show, you're like, Kirk, there's a huge missed opportunity that's not happening in dentistry because I see all this stuff come in over and over and over again. And we're going to talk about that. I want you to first describe who you are, where you practice, and then we're going to go into the second piece. But I want to say to the viewers that are watching this now, we are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you have questions, please ask the questions because this is going to be good. And I'm going to ask Dr. Woodyard myself your question, and we'll get the answer from him straight from the top. So tell everybody who you are and where you practice.
Well, I'm James Woodyard. I'm a board-certified periodontist. I live in Evansville, Indiana. My practice is in Newburgh, which is a little small town right beside Evansville. Been in practice here since 2004. Graduated in 2002. Got a wife and two boys and blessed to work with a lot of great people. And I really love what I do. My father-in-law is a dentist. My brother's a dentist. And so I guess that rubbed off on my brother a little bit too. And you know him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
yeah. So that's a little bit about me mainly. I like to have fun, and there's nothing other than shooting trap and skeet, maybe, that I like more than perio.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you and I can talk perio all day long, and we are going to talk perio within this. But one of the biggest missed opportunities, because you got a pretty good study, it's big and it's amazing. So, and you get a lot of incredible cases that you're working back and forth with GPs. And what's the biggest missed opportunity you see as these come back and forth?
Diagnosis. I mean, just one word. people want to take time to do treatment. But sometimes I see that they haven't taken the time to really sit down and look the patient over, especially if it's a patient on recall. That diagnosis happens at a new patient appointment, but diagnosis is the key. There's so much missed opportunity as far as treatment, as far as figuring out why something happens. A lot of times things get treated before we even really know what's going on. So yeah, that, to me, that's the biggest missed opportunity. People have patients right under their nose that they're missing.
Right. And why do you think that's happening? Because you get to see a lot of this. Why do you think there's just underdiagnosis so much in dentistry? Now, is there a shortage of things to do?
There's not a shortage of things to do. I think I could be busy for the rest of my life and probably keep three people here busy if everybody said yes.
Right.
But that's the key. I think dentists are afraid of people saying no.
Right.
It's just like when you tell your hygienist to watch something. If you tell your hygienist to watch something quite a few times, then they're going to quit telling you about it. Mm-hmm. If a patient tells you time and time and time again, if you multiple patients say they don't want to do this, then eventually you're going to train yourself not to bring it up.
Right. Right. I always hear people say that we're going to watch this. Watch it do what? Watch it do flips. Watch it do watch what? And so that's really one of those verbal things we encourage a lot of teams to take out. But go back to, you know, the whole diagnosis thing. It's a lot of times it's people just don't take the time. Like you just don't slow down. So is that what you see a lot? Because we see diagnosis in the United States with dentists, it's at about 25-24%. Now that means the number of patients that are seen by dentists, only 24% of those patients, something is actually logged into the computer and listed as something that could be done. Do you see that too?
I see that a lot. You know, so I have patients referred to me sometimes and the referral says for loose teeth. Mm-hmm. Loose teeth is not a diagnosis.
Right.
Do they have occlusal trauma, primary or secondary? Do they have bruxism? Do they have temporomandibular joint disorder? Why is this happening? I can't figure out how to make a tooth tight again until I know why it's happening.
Right.
So the diagnosis is key. Once you have a diagnosis, then you can move on and you can do other things. But I guess dentists feel like they don't want to take the time and patients don't feel like we're doing anything unless we're grinding on something or cutting on something. You know, and we have to educate our patients. And I tell my patients the most important appointment that you ever have is this examination. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if somebody in hygiene is having a problem, I tell them in hygiene, this quick examination is to identify problems. We're going to get you back over on my side and we're going to really pour over this and we're going to figure out why this is happening.
Right.
Then we're going to come up with a plan to treat it for you. And if you talk to them like that, they're like, oh, wow, he's going to study it. He's going to study me. And then they become more open to things.
Right.
And I think that's a lot of the missed opportunity. I asked my study club, how many patients in your hygiene do you actually pull back and do new patient exams on a year?
What was the answer?
The room got really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I said, stop. You know, these people are not second class citizens just because you got their initial problems treated. Now it's 10 years down the road. Things change. Things occur.
Right. Right.
Pull them back in. Treat them like royalty, like you treat those new patients all over again. Show them that you care, and then they're going to listen to you. And they're going to be more accepting of treatment because you already have that trust built. They're in your practice.
Right. And what you're bringing up is a great point, too, because it's called the standard of care. Now, you look at other healthcare professionals, they all have thresholds that women have to have mammograms on regular intervals or things happen. Yep. Colonoscopies have to be done in certain intervals. And why not be any different in a dental practice? And it's really a mind shift of the clinician to say, hey, look, I'm not looking for crowns here. I have regular procedures and protocols here throughout my entire practice to make sure I keep people healthy because there are significant changes that happen. And you get to decide. Now, the question comes up all the time. If I'm going to do this as a GP, do you think once every 3 years, every year? Now, you mentioned year, but would you do it once every 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? What do you think?
You know, I'm not real sure about that. At my practice, you know, I alternate hygiene patients with the general dentist so that we can keep an eye on their perio.
Right.
So once we see things starting to go south, we may say, hey, well, we're going to try root planing. So, and I'll actually talk about that in the hygiene chair.
Yeah.
But if I start seeing things go really south or I see a cracked tooth or something like that, then when problems start presenting itself, then that's when you need to pull them out. Then they're not healthy. You only clean people's teeth on healthy patients.
Right, right.
They got to be healthy to be in a maintenance program. Otherwise, you're not maintaining anything.
Right. Yeah. And now go into this too, because let's just say I'm a young dentist. I'm 32 and I'm like, you know, Dr. Woodyer, I totally get it, but you know what? I'm just getting started on this. And the one thing I hate is rejection. And I'm so worried about overwhelming patients. So a lot of times I just don't go there. Maybe I'm moving a little fast from hygiene to hygiene. What would you say to me as a referring dentist to you?
It's not our right as a clinician to decide how healthy a patient's mouth should be. It's theirs.
Right.
And you have to put their problems on them. They aren't our teeth. They aren't our problems. And you can be really open and honest about it. I mean, I look right at them. You know, sometimes with a hygiene visit, well, I'm like, well, you have a 9-millimeter pocket. We've got to get you back. We're probably going to have to do some surgery on that. But I really need to look it over and put something together. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want surgery. Well, how long would you like to keep your teeth? What? What do you mean? I was like, well, it's up to you. I said, I'm here to try to keep your teeth healthy.
Right.
If you choose not to do that, that's your choice.
Right.
That's your choice. But there's really no point in us moving forward with treatment if you're not willing to try to save your teeth. And, you know, that's why you come here. You right. don't come here because we clean teeth well. Mm-hmm. You know, you come here with a healthy mouth. You come here to the mouth connected to the body. How healthy do you want your body? Mm-hmm. I mean, you need to bring up dental infection, how it increases your risk of heart attack and stroke by 250 to 350%. People are not coming to the dentist for cosmetics anymore. They want to be healthy. Actually, our background screensavers are a picture of the body, and you've probably seen this, that have all the different things that show dental infections. It's not just perio, you know, it's abscesses, it's periapical lesions, it's dental decay. The bacteria from the decay will get down into the gingival sulcus and go through, and, you know, it causes problems. And so you got to come to people like that, and you have to make them decide that they want that. Right. Otherwise, you're just beating your head up against the wall. And so you have to have frank conversations in a nice way, in a caring way, but you have to have frank conversations. If you don't, you're never going to have any treatment acceptance.
Yeah, absolutely. I often think it's better to be clear than it is to be nice, you know, yes. because sometimes people err on the side. Not that we don't want you to be nice. It's important to be nice. But I think sometimes we trade one for the other. You know, yeah. you're too nice and not clear enough. And the other thing I heard a great clinician say a long time ago that totally got me on this subject is that diagnosis is a neutral report of findings. It's not an offensive or, you know, you're just, it's neutral. I am just mm-hmm. telling you what I see. And you use the word choice. Like, I love the magic word choice, because you do want the patients to make a choice.
Yes. Yes. So. It's our job to give them the best informed choice. And at the same time, you have to make sure that you're getting the data that you need to know when to flip the switch. If you have hygiene patients in your office and you have never perioprobed them, which I see that a lot. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of periodontal disease being diagnosed off radiographs and the gums look swollen. And then I drop a perioprobe in there and it's dropping down 10 millimeters and there's a root fracture. But maybe they've been putting a restin in there. You know, we didn't come up with the diagnosis. We didn't come up with a root fracture. We came up with a pocket. We treated a pocket. We didn't treat a root fracture. A radiograph wasn't ever taken. We got to slow down. We got to think, okay, am I getting all the data that I need to know when these patients need to come back? Am right. I getting all the data that I need to be able to figure out the best way to treat this that's going to use their money wisely and use my time wisely? Because you don't want somebody to get mad at you. I mean, you're trying to help them like that. You know, I was telling you, they were squirting a restin into a pocket for a root fracture. They were trying to help. We're yeah. trying to do the right thing. But instead of taking the time for an x-ray and a radiograph of the area, they spent time squirting stuff in a pocket because they were trying to do something rather than diagnose something.
And a lot of the diagnosis goes back to just really understanding what a clinical examination is, getting a fantastic examination. And how many dentists do you think out there have had adequate training in that and worked in that area?
A lot of the people that I see coming out of dental school, of course, a perio is what I see, mm-hmm. but I do see a lack of training in that. And perio is always painted pretty poorly. Perio is what kept you from getting out of dental school, you know? You had that one patient you wanted to do a partial on, but there was perio on a couple of teeth, and they had to go to the perio guys, and you never saw them again. So it's this real negative view of things. Yeah. You've got to link up with a good periodontist that's going to take care of your patients, get them back to you, that's going to be helpful, and it's going to train you. And linking up with a good specialist, whether it's an endodontist, periodontist, oral surgeon, orthodontist, that will help you and educate you is huge. Because yeah. just getting out of dental school anymore isn't enough.
No, it's not.
It isn't enough. No, yeah. it's not enough.
Because when you get out, you realize this, wow, my learning is just beginning. And I didn't realize that there were human beings attached to these teeth. And wow, I've got a business to run. I've got a lot of things going on. Yeah. You have all of these internal and external pressures. And you facilitate a Seattle study club, which is crazy brilliant. Like, it's one of the greatest things that's ever happened. Why is that so incredibly important as you grow together and helping patients?
You know, my study club's 11 years old. And so I'm now one of the kind of the old guys, which is pretty funny. Mm-hmm. But when I first started this, I didn't start it because I wouldn't wanted to be busy, because I was very, very lucky, very blessed, and that I was really busy from day one.
Right.
But I saw a lot of things that I thought, you know, some people, they just don't know this. They aren't doing something. They just don't know that you do perio before you send them to an orthodontist.
Right.
You know, they don't know this stuff. So I'm like, we need to enrich and make dentistry better. And so that's what this has done. This lets us work together. We bring in some great speakers like you. I mean, we've had Jerry Sheesh. We've had, I mean, you name it, we've had them. Maurice Salama, Sonia Lee, Zebron Miller. We got great speakers, but sometimes, a lot of times when we have our treatment planning sessions where we work together on a treatment plan and we're just talking about it, I have guys come up to me and said, that was the single best program we had this year, period.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you got to make it a non-threatening environment. You got to make it where they can talk. When I first started the study club and when I first started practice, I was an idiot. I'm just going to tell you straight up. I mean, you know, you come out of dental school or you come out of residency and you see something and you look at it and you're like, what the hell were they thinking? You know, right. Why did they do that? That's got an amalgam overhang on that. My mm-hmm. God, they caused that patient to have perio.
Yeah.
And then I would call the dentist and come to find out that patient was an epileptic and they couldn't sit still in the chair and they were doing the best they could. So we're always trying to do the right thing. I don't know hardly anybody in dentistry that doesn't want to help people. And so we can't be judgmental. And when we're in the study club, as a facilitator, I have to learn, even when there's questions that I think they should really know this. You know, that's a great question. Let's explore that a little bit. Let them figure it out on their own. Make it non-threatening. Show them some ways to benefit them. Don't make it about sending the Woodyard periodontics. Once every other year, we have something about perio. I tally my members and I send out surveys every year. What are you needing to learn?
Right.
And then I take that with what I know, what I've been talked to about. And that's how I design my program. It's not about trying to get referrals to the office. In reality, you know, everybody in my study club that's a specialist loves it, because after the study club meeting's over, everybody's sitting there for like 30 minutes to an hour. There's a group over here talking about an orthodontic case. There's a group over here talking about an implant case. And people are coming together. It's a very isolated thing that we do if you're not with partners. And to have somebody else to bounce things off of, you're going to learn and you're going to get bigger and you're going to get stronger and you're going to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you use the magic word there, because it's called isolation. When you start a business, it's incredibly isolating and very frustrating. Like, you can feel yourself going crazy sometimes. And if you don't have the ability to reach out and be a part of a group, and what you've done here, a couple things I want to just point out is you get people to think, even with me, when we're talking about concepts, you'll pause and you'll go, what do you think that, why do you think that happens? And I'm like, I don't know. That's a pretty good question. Cause you want me to be part of the solution too. Like, you just don't want to give me the answer, which is the mark of a great teacher. But the other thing, a mark of a great leader is not only growing people in your practice. I mean, you're growing patients, but you're growing an entire community around where we're upping our game, everybody. And having a great periodontist, you know, this is a very controversial issue right now in dentistry. People are keeping more in-house to grow their production, and you can see it. I mean, some of them are going insane because they're doing procedures that they shouldn't be doing, and they're frustrating the heck out of themselves. But it's bigger than that, because what happens is, ultimately, as you start to age, you ask yourself, what's the right thing for the patient? What's the right thing for me? Because I've got to stay in my circle of expertise, and working with a great periodontist like you, who's pretty much a straight shooter, you're going to make me up my game. You're going to go, hey, look, come on. We're both working on this patient, but do you see what's going on here? Come on. Yeah. I need you to up your game, because that way we together can do the right thing for them, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had a lot of the guys in my study club a few years ago wanting me to show them how to do ridge preservations. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. I said, which technique? Like, what do you mean? Just put some bone in a socket and close it up, and there you go. I was like, well, what tooth is it? Where is it at? What type of flap are you going to design? And I said, I will definitely have a class on this, but you're going to have to roll with me. So I had a class, and actually I got models, and we did a little hands-on thing, and I showed them all the different flaps, all the different types of stuff that I did to really accomplish what it's not just sticking a bone in a socket. And so people need to know, a lot of the manufacturers make everything look easy. Whether it's like, hey, we can do braces in 6 months, when they're just really lining up the front teeth. Yeah. Okay. They're not doing anything about the bite. They're not doing anything about the cross arch. Or we can, you know, oh, we can just throw an implant in. Well, I see a lot of implants that are thrown in, and sometimes we have to pull them out. every dentist is a specialist, whether he's a general dentist, oral surgeon, endodontist, you know, orthodontist, whoever. We all have to figure out where we're comfortable. Now, the most productive dentists that I see that have great practices, they refer out a lot because they figured out what they want to do. Now, I have one dentist who does almost all of his own endo, and he loves endo. And he has gone to a ton of training on endo. He didn't go to a weekend course. He loves endo, but he doesn't do endo on maxillary molars. And he doesn't do endo on molars, the lower molars that have three roots. He knows his limitations, but he does that really, really well. But, you know, like I know how to do a veneer. Kurt, would you want me to do a veneer on you? I haven't done a veneer since 1999.
No. I don't want you doing anything. Now go back. And you actually said this before the show. You said, who do you want delivering your baby? Describe that concept. I love that.
It's not about the orthodontist, periodontist, whatever. But again, if you were going to have a baby, would you have your family physician? Would you have a midwife? Or would you maybe go to an OBGYN that specialized in that? Which would you want to pick?
There's no question.
Yeah. I mean, you want to get the best thing that can be done for your patients. And then you need to figure out the diagnosis portion of it. So you're diagnosing people with crowns that need to be replaced and different things that you love to treat. So you're going to keep yourself really busy with that. You're going to be more productive because if you do something you do every day, you're going to be in less amount of time. You're going to do it with a higher level of proficiency and you're going to have a better practice and you're going to be happier. You're not going to be as stressed out. You're not going to have as much junk. They were talking about a CAT scan unit the other day and it said you have to literally place 120 implants a year to have a CAT scan unit and have it to be profitable. That's a fair amount of implants.
It is.
And if you're doing restorative dentistry and this and that and the other, then why are you getting that? Maybe because the rep told you, this is going to make you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's ego, but those things are not cheap. They're not cheap at all. No, and not at all. The relevancy of the technology is going to expire in 4 or 5 years. You're going to be out of date anyway, and you're still going to be paying on the note well after the relevancy. So that's a crazy important point. And what you're doing here, when we talk about diagnosis, I want to go back to, because working with a great specialist and you're establishing a dialogue, like you guys are looking at patients, you're discussing, because really one of the essence of the Seattle Study Club, what you do is it's treatment planning. We're discussing what all of us see here. And then I got your back. We're helping each other. And you even brought this up. Sometimes you get the question from the GP or maybe the orthodontist that says, hey, when do I refer when it comes to recession in ortho? And you're like, good question, but I have a question for you. Like, tell us why that's so important to have this dialogue when it comes to things like that and occlusal trauma.
A general dentist emailed me yesterday and said, you know, I have a patient that has gum recession. They're in orthodontics. When do we refer them? My first question was, where are the teeth positioned? Are they buccal? Are they moving them buccal? Are they in the correct position that I could do a graft and it's going to heal up? Mm-hmm. Because if it's too far buccal, I can't do a graft.
Right.
I said, you know, all these different questions. And they didn't know. That's fine. There was no photos or anything from the LIFOR. Photos are huge in diagnosis. Take lots of pictures. And so that's things that I know that I wouldn't expect a general dentist to know. They aren't trained that in school. Mm-hmm. You know, now we talk about it in the study club. We sit down and I try to find these things. You know, when I have these questions, I have a piece of paper and I write them down. And so I'm like, we need to hit that next year. You know what I mean? We need to talk about that. In our treatment planning sessions, I always try to pick a case and I'm like, these are some questions that I'm getting that I wouldn't expect them to know. I wouldn't expect them to know if they went through a GPR. I would do over 150 hours of CE a year. Still.
Which is a lot. It's a lot.
And I really like it. I'm always afraid I'm going to miss something, you know? Mm-hmm. And my grandpa always told me to hang out with people smarter than you and you become smarter. And that's what I try to do. But the diagnosis, that takes a lot of training. Okay. I mean, you got to get the data. You got to know the tooth position. If you don't want to take models, take pictures. Mm-hmm. They're easy. Okay. And they don't cost a lot of money. Take some pictures, figure out the set of pictures, cheek retracted, smile, side, you know, get a few mirrors, go to the photography class. It's going to save you a lot of money. And it's also when you go to present that treatment to the patient, visibly, they're going to see it. And they're going to be like, wow, look at that filling. That's terrible. Mm-hmm. And it's going to make it a lot easier for you. But we use pictures to communicate. One of the things I did today was I picked this up. Okay. And I'm giving away my tip for the Seattle Study Club, but one of my doctors, we have a complicated case and I had a few questions and it's hard to come over after work and meet and sit down. We've got families and this and that. I mean, it's really hard to get everybody together. That's why the study club's so good because we bring cases to that and we all sit down and talk about it. Mm-hmm. But for this, I picked it up. I turned it on video. I held it to my screen. I said, hey, Tyler, I got this and this and this going on. I got a few questions for you about it. What do you think? And then I went and I sent it to him in an encrypted text. And he's like, oh, that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Some of the pictures are kind of pixelated, mm-hmm. but I kind of got the message. And it was so much easier because of that visual communication.
Right.
I mean, if we work together, we can do a whole lot more. And when you have an interdisciplinary case, it takes a lot more time. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you got to figure that into what you're doing and the fees that you're doing for things and stuff like that. But ultimately, you're going to be a lot more productive if you focus on what you're good at. You spend a lot of time diagnosing it, getting the right data, and figure out, again, how to present that data to the patient because it's their problem, not yours.
Right. This is huge because, again, a lot of just dentists that we see are just incredibly isolated and they just don't slow down. We have practices from all over the country come to us and they always say, I want more new patients. And 99% of them don't need one single patient. They have a practice within their practice. Some of them have two and three practices within the practice. You open up any chart, you're like, oh my goodness, like there's bone loss here. You've got things falling apart in these people that you really, really care about. So slowing it down and getting an extra set of eyes on there and some accountability, because you do create a little bit of, you don't just let people come into your study club and go, no, just hang out and just take all the information. You'll be good. Like you have a certain level of accountability when you're spending time with people, correct?
Yeah. It's invitation only. We keep it down to 52 members. We never have more than 52, but there's always a few people that can't get in and right. You know, it's good people. And I've learned from everybody in my study club. The reason that I'm a better periodontist today is because I know more about restorative dentistry, orthodontics, and endodontics. It's not that my perio knowledge has gotten huge. It's because every bit of that interacts. And the periodontist and the general dentist, everything that happens to a tooth affects what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, position of the tooth and bacteria around the tooth. I mean, everything affects what we do. And so we're really having to be the biggest diagnosticians in dentistry. And that's the thing. You know, you got to know when a person has had a tooth shift because they're a tongue thruster. And if they're a tongue thruster, well, maybe we need to send them to ortho. Maybe a bite guard's not going to fix it. You've got to figure these things out and get to the right diagnosis before you just start grinding on a tooth or something else. You know, don't watch a crown that has a poor margin. Watch it get bad to the point that it's going to break off and we have to do an implant. Say, would you like to try to do a little crown lengthening and save this tooth? Or would you like to just do a new crown and save this tooth? That might get you 10 years. Be honest with them about it. Nothing that we do lasts forever. And we got to get over that. You know, that's an ego thing. I think we want it to, you know, I want all my implants to last forever. You know, do I think every implant in 40 years from now is going to be there? I do not. Mm-hmm. I think they're really great, but they're not going to. Things break down. Think about all the wear and tear people put on their mouths.
Right. And as a common theme has been with all the clinicians, or everybody I speak to, I mean, some of the best money a human being could ever invest is right here.
Yeah.
Because people are going to be living a lot longer. And as you get older, it's just crazy important how it controls the rest of your entire system. Now, you talked about inflammation. You talked about those things because, and I just want to talk about this and have you dig a little bit deeper, but the whole rotch and the little, I hear this all the time, and this is the joke in dentistry, there's a little bleeding. Now, there's either an infection, that you're not just a little pregnant, you're either pregnant or you're not pregnant, right? That's yeah. that's the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And so dentists do this all the time, general dentists, well, there's a little bleeding or there's a little, give me some thoughts on that whole process when it comes to diagnosis and perio.
It's funny because something is in their mouth, people don't see it. Steve Offenbacher did some research on perio, and he said if somebody has periodontal disease, the amount of infected area beneath the gum line that is red, bleeding, occasionally seeps pus, is about the size of the palm of your hand.
Mm.
Now, if you had that on your leg and you had a big open wound that was like just raw, like you touch it, it bled just a little,
yeah.
You know, and it seeped pus, my God, you would be running to the dermatologist in 5 minutes. But in the mouth, you can't see it. They can't taste it. And it doesn't hurt. It's doing okay. You know, you've got to let patients know that if you wait for something to hurt, you're going to be in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got inflammation, that causes bleeding. Inflammation is the enemy. I mean, look at what inflammation does to the rest of the body. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Inflammation is what causes perio. It's what causes recession, whether it's toothbrush abrasion, whether it's bacteria. Inflammation is the enemy. And if you wait long enough, then you know, we can take a tooth out and replace it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty nice to save teeth. I mean, I think teeth are pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you can get a lot more time out of a tooth than you can an implant if treated well, because
yeah.
a tooth heals.
Incredibly cool. So On the note of diagnosis, any last pieces of advice that you'd give to a young dentist who's starting out on this path and says, hey, look, I totally get it. And I just underdiagnose. Where would you start?
Well, the first thing is, and the hardest ones that I've seen are young dentists that come out and they buy a practice. Great dentist, but you know, he's just kind of cruising out or she's just kind of cruising out. And you know, they didn't want to have to cross that bridge. And we're just watching. There's a lot of watching. Mm-hmm. And then they come in and you know, every time they talk to somebody, they're thinking, oh my God, they're trying to pay for this practice. And that's why they're telling me this. That's a first thought in their head. Diagnosis. Say, you know, spend extra time. Maybe if you spend a little bit of extra time in an exam and a treatment conference and be honest, you know, these are the problems that I see. This mm-hmm. is the way I do it. These are the problems that I see. I tell them when I start, I'm going to tell you the problems that you see. I'm going to tell them the risks that it poses to you. And then I'm going to tell them some solutions where we can maybe be able to help you. And then you go through that, they know what's coming. And you just say, you know, these are the problems. You know, you've got an open crown margin here. Now what's going to happen? We need, you know, and tell them about the open crown margin. Tell them about all the different problems. Then go to the solutions. Don't get it confusing. Then you're on the solutions. Then you're on the treatment. And then, you know, if they look at you and say, well, that's a lot. Is there a way we could kind of break this up? That's a very good question. Let me work on that a little bit. We'll see how healthy would you like your mouth to be? At what point would you like us to have you at the optimum health?
Absolutely. And then you said this, we were talking before we got started. You said the number one problem that you see sometimes with this is that people treat before they've established a really clear why. Now, this isn't just a clinical why. This is really understanding why the patient's there in the first place. Why are they here? Why are they doing anything? So go a little bit deeper into that because that's huge. Because I do see that too. People are willing. They're so quick to treat.
Yeah. I want to be honest with you. I can do a comprehensive periodontal exam and occlusal exam in the mouth on a patient, soft tissue exam. I'm talking mobility, attachment level probing, the whole shoot and match in about 15 minutes. We're very efficient. We have steps and my assistants have prompts. Mm-hmm. You know, they go through the exam, but my minimum exam is 30 minutes. The other 15 minutes, I'm talking to them. Mm-hmm. I move to the side. I look them in the eye. My assistant is behind me. They have some paper. My key to my assistant is when I repeat something back to the patient, you better write that down because that's important. You know, I ask them, say, well, are you having any discomfort? What are your concerns about your mouth? And then I listen, you know, oh, okay, well, have you been going to that dentist long? Oh, open-ended questions. You explore, you want to figure out what their chief complaint is. You want to figure out why maybe it took them so long to get to where they're at. Mm-hmm. You got to figure out the barriers and the fit issues.
Right.
And then you got to figure out what they're interested in. We are selling something that they do not want.
Yeah.
Do not feel bad if you're trying to gear your conversation to their wants and needs. Mm-hmm. Some people want to chew. Some people want to look pretty. Some people want to get it done as quick as they can and don't want to be inconvenienced. Some people want the best possible dentistry. I mean, there's different personality types and you got to figure out what's going to be important to them. So when you go to present that treatment, then you're ready for it. Then you make yourself some notes. You pull those notes out before you go in and you know exactly what to talk about. Yeah. And don't feel cheap like you're trying to sell a car. You're trying to change what's important to them. They want a big screen TV. They want a Ford F-150. Okay. I had a patient in yesterday that was a Teeth Express patient and we had done upper and lower arches. Okay. And we had an assistant from the assisting salon. She looked in there and she's like, wow, that was crazy. She goes, how much does something like that cost? I said, well, between the general dentist and I, it was about $50,000. She goes, my God, nobody can afford that. And I said, how many people drive, you know, trucks with extended cabs here in this town, you think?
Quite a few.
Oh, yeah. You know, what do you use this more? I said, do you want an oral wig, which I like to call a denture?
Oh, goodness.
Okay. Yeah. Or do you want to be able to speak, communicate, chew your food? You know, a denture, your ability to chew is 10%. Mm. Okay. Healthy teeth is 100%. A Teeth Express is 90. I mean, it's a new lease on life, but right. You got to get them to the point that they want it.
Right.
It's an emotional decision. You got to bring it in a little bit, but you want to be really honest with people. And I've even looked at guys and said, hey, listen, I'm not trying to get in your pocket here. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm busy. I'm happy. I just want to help you.
Right.
And I mean, just if you're legitimate, if you're sincere, they will see that and then they will come and it will work, but you got to build the trust. You got to be honest. You got to have a system to where that, you know, you're identifying problems. You're looking at occlusion. You're looking at perio. You're looking at restorations that are breaking down. You're looking at you know, the bone, apical lesions. You're looking at the whole gambit of dentistry, and you have that listed out. Your team knows what you're looking at. They are prompting you. Every exam is the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes I look at somebody and, you know, I'm doing a TMJ exam, but they have no problems. And we go through it and I look at them like, no problems there. We move on. Yeah. So, you know, we don't skip it, but we go through it quickly because there's no issues there. But you got to go through all that. You got to go through the steps. Just because somebody's been with you for 30 years doesn't mean that they haven't developed something. Things change. You know, things change. And you can't get upset about that. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. I equated to cars. You know, just you got your oil changed every 3,000 miles, but you still had to replace your tires. It blew an engine block. You know, how many cars have you driven for 30 years and you've never had to replace it?
Right. And there are so many changes with patients that you've been working for a long time because you care about these people. And one of the best things you can say, like, if you're struggling with this as a young dentist, is just say, hey, look, one of the things I'm noticing, Mrs. Jones, is I'm noticing some changes in your mouth. I care about you. I want you to keep your teeth for a long time. And here's what I see. Not necessarily you have this problem, but here's what we're noticing. And that's a critical piece. Now, I want to go back to one other thing that you talked about. Because establishing their why, it's really one of the most important concepts in interdisciplinary treatment planning or helping any patient. And there's so much talk in great treatment planning around the four pillars of diagnosis. You've got structure, function, biology, and aesthetics. And people spend so much time putting those four pieces together in diagnosis. And you and I totally agree. There's a fifth pillar that's probably the most important pillar. It's probably half of the diagnosis, and it's really understanding someone's story. So when you're doing an exam, you know, half of it is about the data, but really half of it is about really understanding the people's story. Because when you get to know their story, you're going to get a whole lot deeper relationship and you're going to get a better understanding of where they want to go in the first place.
You're exactly right. And that's one of the reasons I think it's so important to look them in the eye. I shake every patient's hand when they come in. That sounds crazy, but it's so important. I ask their permission before I lean them back. I mean, we have all this written down, and this tricks we've learned over the years. We give them sunglasses when they lean back in the chair. I tell them, hey, that's for that bright light, when in reality, it's for OSHA. But yes. I got sunglasses, and you know, and so we try to make them feel comfortable, you know, and I'll talk to them. And throughout the exam, I tell them stories about me, personal stories about my kids, or I tell them a joke or this and that. I want them to know me, too. I want to open up a little bit about myself, because if I open up a little bit about me, they're going to open up more about them.
Right.
And that's huge. You got to learn their story. You know, I've got a patient that I saw yesterday. He was 95 years old, and I've been seeing him for years. Mm-hmm. And he's broken off all of his four front teeth. And I've been telling him for a long time, perio is fine. He's missing some teeth. I'm like, the crowns are pretty broken down. I'm trying to help his general dentist to get him motivated for treatment. Well, he didn't really want to fix them. And they broke off, and they have root canals. And so they just filed him down, and he's got a partial. And I just set him up in the chair. I don't like talking to people when they're laying back in the chair. Right. You know, I set him up in the chair and looked at him, and I'm just going to call him Joe. I said, Joe, you know, you've been with me for a long time. We can do some super cool things now. I mean, you're missing most of your upper teeth. How's your partial doing for you? Well, it's fitting pretty good. Okay. I said, well, these teeth have root canals. They're holding the bone in place. That's pretty cool. I said, but you know, if you ever want to chew better, if you ever want to, you know, maybe have something you have to take out at night, there's some things we can do. Would you ever be interested? He goes, I'm 93 years old. I'm chewing pretty good. I can eat what I want, and I'm happy. I said, okay, well, you don't have any disease other than missing teeth. Now, you know that wearing that partial over time, that's going to rock those other teeth and may cause you to lose some more. Now, over time, you may end up in a denture. I don't know. But I just wanted you to know that and wanted you to be aware, so I don't want you mad at me. Mm-hmm. And I just, because I don't want you mad at me when it happens.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's cool. I totally understand. And so we're treating him effectively. We're doing comprehensive care. We're doing examination. He's not somebody. His story told me, you know, just talking to him a little bit, I'm not going to send him back for a treatment conference for a Teeth Express. That's stupid. That's a waste of his money, my time. And he'll just get mad at me about it.
Right.
So take time to listen.
Yeah. And that's the biggest deal is I hope if you got anything out of this, the biggest single missed opportunity in restorative dentistry is just slowing down a diagnosis. It's not about the data. And James, I ask young dentists all this, I'm like, your diagnosis is so low because I know your patients want some great dentistry. Yeah. And then every dentist goes, well, it was crazy yesterday. The day before, that was crazy too. They just don't slow down. I really think people could do a better job and have more fun doing it if they just slow down. And that can be said about the whole entire world. And at the end, it's a great result. And, you know, as a dentist, you're probably going to have 3 to 4, maybe you could even argue the new dentists are going to have 5 decades of dentistry. I can't imagine that, but they're going to be living. 1 in 3 babies that's born today is going to be living to 100. And what a great career when you can look back and say, I've helped a lot of people. So, and buddy, you're doing that. So I appreciate you.
doing my best, bud.
Oh, man, you and I are going to cover a lot of these different topics. Now, somebody has a question. If you're watching this and you have a question, I want you to add it to the feed. And Dr. Woodyard's great. You're going to see how brilliant he is many, many times over. And then also, too, if somebody wanted to send you an email, do you have, where can they get a hold of you or how can I get a hold of you?
Yeah, it's drw@woodyardperio.com. Yeah. So Dr. DRW at Woodyard, WOODYARDPERIO.com.
Yeah. And I think you could echo this sentiment. If you're a dentist watching this and you're not surrounding yourself with good people, like your grandfather used to say, you know, you got to get involved in a great study club like the Seattle Study Club. So whether you're the specialist or a GP, there's nothing better. Just find one. Even if you have to drive, go and sit in there and you'll find it'll change your life. It's going to change your practice, your dentistry, and ultimately change your life. It's good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, brother, for being on. I really appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, Kirk.
Absolutely. And I'm thanking you for watching. If you're watching the Best Practices Show, keep watching and let us know if there's any other topics you'd love to see out there. Until we see you next time, have a great rest of your day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.